If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Thanks for tuning in to Daily Roll Call here on ConservativeNationMedia.com. If you are with us tonight, you know that this is the place to be on Friday nights as we talk about everything Muslim Brotherhood. So thank you for joining us. Our number to call in tonight is 718-305-716. For questions or comments, please feel free to call in. You know, if you're here every Friday night, you know this is all we talk about. We talk about everything Muslim Brotherhood and everything to do with the Middle East, you know. So tonight, seeing that they give us such a plethora of topics to discuss, we've picked a few from some of the emails that we get to talk about in our second hour. So if just to touch base with what a few of the things we'll be going over after in the 8 o'clock hour will be the National Endowment of Humanities. And I know you're saying, well, what has that got to do with Muslims? Of course, you know that I'll find the connection there. But they have launched a program across the nation in over 900 libraries called Bridging Cultures, the Muslim Bookshelf. So that is going to be one of the topics that we're going to be discussing. The person that emailed us about that program is hot under the collar, as rightly so, because of it being a government entity, and we're going to talk about that. Another question and another statement that came in an email that people would like to hear about is that there is an event coming out of Murfreesboro, Tennessee, which involves the backing of the Muslim Brotherhood, go figure, since the Muslim Brotherhood Mosque is there in Murfreesboro. And of all things, it is an art project. So this is something that is currently happening in the Murfreesboro, Tennessee area. So we're going to touch on that. And then looks like we're going to be talking about CARE, a.k.a. Hamas, is launching a new program, which will be taking them once again into your children's schools across this country. So once, you know, we get going here, we'll get into, you know, who CARE is and who all these other entities are, as we always do. If you pay attention every week and you're here every week, then you know. You know, we talk often about the strategic goal for North America, which is the Muslim Brotherhood Manifesto. We have been breaking down lately the four stages of Islamic infiltration. And I did get a very interesting question about that. And I think what I'm going to do is pose that question to our first guest tonight when we introduce her. She'll be coming on very shortly. We got a real special guest. But talking about the four stages of infiltration, one of the questions was, where are we at? Where do you think we are at in those four stages? And, you know, we've gone over these stages kind of bit by bit. And as you can see, as time goes by, we seem to be increasing towards the next stage. And, you know, I guess where we're at right now, I would have to say, you know, according to this particular document, stage two. And that's where, you know, your proselytizing increases, or the dawah, which is obviously the proselytizing of Islam, the, you know, revisionist efforts to Islamatize history, the use of charities to recruit supporters and fund jihad. That is all just stage two. But as you look a little bit further, I mean, we're well beyond stage one. Forget stage one. We're beyond that, folks. Stage three which basically is open war on the leadership and culture. Now, I don't know that we necessarily have a war on leadership and culture, not yet, but there are a lot of these things in stage three that are occurring, unfortunately, in other areas. We've got the mass execution of non-Muslims. We have the widespread ethnic cleansing by Islamic militias. So there are a lot of things going on in stage three in other countries, but fortunately not in ours yet. But we know that that's coming. So we're going to touch a little bit more on that. And like I say, we maybe will ask that question of our guest. And our guest this evening is a expert on Middle Eastern. He is a counterterrorism expert as well, including the now named terrorist organization, the Muslim Brotherhood. It's going to be our guest tonight is going to be Lisa Daftari, who is a regular on the Fox News Channel, as well as an award-winning journalist. And we're going to be talking about first, we have a couple questions from emails for Lisa about the persecution of religions, specifically probably Christianity in Iran. And then, of course, we're going to be talking about the Muslim Brotherhood. So I'll tell you now, if you have a question for Lisa, you know, start calling in 718-305-7176 and get your questions ready, because this is a great opportunity for you to ask an expert that is very familiar with what is happening in Iran and in the Middle East. We have a caller here. I'm just going to check to see if this is our guest. Good evening. Hello.
Good evening.
Hi, is this Lisa?
This is Lisa.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you so much for joining us. We've got quite a few questions coming in for emails for you already. I introduced you. I don't know if you heard me introduce you. And there's so many topics to talk about. It was kind of hard to go through a lot of emails and pin down, you know, so many things to ask you. You know, if you're ready, I'll start with our first questions from someone. Okay. Elaine in Naples, Florida. Said that, let's see here, since the new president of Iran was elected, it appears the campaign to shut down major churches is increasing as the amount of arrests being made for being a Christian. The refusal of our administration as well as religious leaders to even discuss the persecutions or slaughters of other faiths is troubling. Why do you think this is something no one is speaking out against?
This is a very good question, and the persecution of Christians goes hand in hand with many other human rights violations, which many, like this person who asked the question and yourself, who are you know, people who are giving attention and highlighting these discrepancies and the hypocrisy, really, of the new Iranian regime. On the one hand, they want to portray themselves as moderates and you know, ever since Rouhani was even running, you know, he campaigned on this moderate platform. And, you know, on the one hand, they want to portray themselves that way. But on the other hand, this is absolutely correct. There have been just as many crackdowns on the youth populations. There have been as many arrests, shutting down of social media sites, persecution of Christians, three Americans being held and not spoken about. And this is, you know, on both parts of the Obama administration to really almost close our eyes and go forward hoping for a nuclear deal so badly that we ignore all these very, very important red flags. And, of course, on the part of the Iranian regime to continue the crackdowns back at home while on the international front attempting to portray themselves as something different, as somebody who, as a regime that's looking to extend a hand and to make nice with the West. So the agenda here is really focused on normalizing the Iranian regime's behavior, only to bring them into the international community, bring them back into the international economy to lessen the sanctions. Again, I don't want to jump topics here, but if we look at the nuclear talks and, you know, what the Iranian regime came to the table for and what they're walking away with is much more than they even came to the table for. So really, on the part of the international community, there is a very significant motivation and agenda to bring in and incorporate this rogue Iranian regime where there has been, you know, over a 35-year freeze, the Americans and us not having any sort of diplomatic relations with Iran. And more specifically, the agenda of this regime, this administration, that, you know, President Obama really campaigned on making nice with the Iranian regime, to be the president, to have one-on-one talks with Iran. He really wants to make this happen. And on the part of the Iranians, we know what they want. They wanted the lessening of the sanctions. They wanted, you know, time, and that's what they walked away with, that and more. They walked away with legitimacy. They walked away with time. They walked away with, you know, a pass on all these human rights violations, a pass on their involvement in Syria, a pass on Syria's war bleeding into Hezbollah being in Lebanon and in Iraq and all these insurgencies, you know, growing globally. So really, I think any one of these questions that we ask right now, whether it's about Christian persecution or about human rights violations or about nuclear Iran, all of these dots can really be connected to tell a larger story about how our foreign policy, the Obama foreign policy, has enabled a terrorist culture within the Middle East and how it's playing right into the Iranian regime's playbook on how they want to export this terrorist ideology. So it's really, this partnership is just perfect for really playing out what's going on.
So it's kind of, I think a lot of people got comfortable with the fact that Ahmadinejad was no longer president, seeing that he was looked at, you know, as a crazy man, and you know, he really did give it that appearance of being crazy. And I think a lot of people have gotten comfortable with the fact that he's no longer president, and this guy did seem to run on a platform that had a lot of human rights, you know, seemed to be more of a priority with him. But then I kind of, you know, quite a couple different stories today that I thought was interesting about how he issued the fatwa against chat rooms, you know, between people.
Right.
And then at the same time, though, he's pushing for the birth of more babies, you know, due to the population decline. And, of course, you know, chat rooms here in America, they're used to meet people and, you know, everything else. So I thought that the contradiction was kind of interesting there. But he sounds, on the surface, he sounds perfectly, you know, legit, and he sounds like he wants to do so much more with us. What do you feel about the relationship that we have, or how we've damaged the relationship Israel by doing this with Iran? Do you think there is a problem there?
There's a huge problem there, and it's because, you know, the calculations of the Israeli government regarding Iran go back 35 years. It's not a short-sighted or short-term memory report card or analysis of what the Iranian regime is capable of doing, similar to what the Obama administration is doing. So the Obama administration very conveniently takes anything post-Ahmadinejad and says that's the snapshot of the Iranian regime which we want to look at. We want to say we have a moderate president. We want to say we've come to an age where we're ready to work with the Iranian regime. And let me just clarify one bit here. Ahmadinejad was the boogeyman, as you said. He was the face of Iran. He was a rogue dictator. He, you know, there's problems back at home with him embezzling money and funds. And then you have Rouhani, who, as you said very accurately, he came on a platform of being more moderate, of making economic reforms. And as we know, throughout the Middle East, if we look at the Arab Spring countries in particular, it's the economy that needs to be revived. It's the young people whose voices need to be heard, et cetera, et cetera. But when you look at Iran, the supreme leader is still in power. He's the same supreme leader that was under Ahmadinejad. So really, the president plays a much less significant role than the public really believes at this point, or that the media reports. So you have a supreme leader. He's the one who issued this fatwa, for example, against online chatting between opposite sexes.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, social media, they're very much fearful of the potential of social media and the potential of a very savvy, technologically aware Iranian population, very young population, that's able to organize and to become informed via the Internet. Smartphones are more common in Iran than anywhere else. So, you know, they're very much aware of these capabilities, and they're going to really crack down on them. So going back to your question, I know I keep going off on tangents because really these points all need to be connected. With regards to Israel, their calculation of what this regime is capable of is not a post-Ahmadinejad or Rouhani age assessment. It goes back to 35 years, and they do not believe the hype, and they have every right not to. So they want to convince President Obama and his administration. And if you remember, Prime Minister Netanyahu came to the UN, and everyone laughed at his cartoon bomb and the red line mm-hmm. that he drew. You know, and that was the Israeli government's assessment and their calculations as to what how they would draw the red line for Iran. And they don't believe that sanctions should be loosened. And why don't they believe that sanctions should be loosened? Because they believe that, and they make the argument very very correctly, that the Iranian regime didn't come to the table because they are now moderate, but they came to the table because they're at an economic choking point. And if we remove that choking point, what are we left with? Well, we're left with that same rogue government that is after a nuclear bomb. They're after exporting terrorism. They're after supporting the Bashar al-Assad regime in Syria at any cost. They're still going to be persecuting Christians. They're still going to be doing whatever they're doing. So why would we now remove this incentive for good behavior?
And I think when we talked about, you know, the red line and how, you know, Mr. Netanyahu did very accurately portray what he felt was the red line. And then, of course, we have our administration who goes in and draws a red line that has been probably stepped over, stepped on, and mushed several different times. And I just think that the whole concept that we no longer, or I think a lot of people feel, we no longer support Israel, when in fact Israel has every right to obviously have the states. But it's very upsetting, I think, because, you know, we're talking about nuclear arms here, and I think that we've allowed, certainly have allowed them to further, you know, their development of this Iranian,
right,
or this, you know, nuclear weapon. So, you know, I did have a question, and it was such a long question, but it had to do with a nuclear detonation, actually, and I guess it says something to the effect of the coming of the 12th imam. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, what is your view? Do you believe that the folks in Iran truly believe that it would take a devastating, basically end-of-the-world scenario to bring back the Mahdi or the 12th imam? The question was so long. I hope, you know, that I was able, for Mike in Pittsburgh, I hope that I was able to kind of push that down into what made sense. But, you know, do you hear a lot about that? Do you believe in the 12th Mahdi, or, you know, the coming of the 12th imam?
Right. And this is something, again, it's interesting because the nuclear issue in Iran is more of a political issue than a religious one. And we see this hypocrisy play, you know, over and over again. Whenever, you know, ever since the Iran-Iraq War of the 1980s, you saw the Khomeini regime always resorting back to religion to round up the people, to get them to rally around the flag. And you have an Islamic Republic of Iran post-1979. So the Shah was deposed, and they had now a Khomeini. Khomeini was leading the nation, and they sent off people's sons to become martyred in Iraq. And once these poor children would be killed, they would call them martyrs, they would now glorify this being killed in the name of Islam. So this has been their go-to because it works. Now, is it because they really truly believe in it? I really doubt that. I think it's one of their political gains, as are so many other things. So, you know, you have a theocracy and an establishment in which no one can really argue with the religion. They can't say that this is not for the country. It's not for Islam. When volunteers are being rounded up over the last 2 years to be sent into Syria, they said the same thing. You have to go, and what the exact sentence in Farsi is that you have to go defend the establishment of Shiite Islam, and that's a very rough translation that I'm making. But again, they would always resort back to this blind faith, and that only speaks to, so this is where I think this is the important part of the response, is that this only speaks to a small segment of the population, and the religious portion of Iran's population has typically been in the lower socioeconomic bracket. So again, would they be able to pay people to come hear Ahmadinejad speak? They would give them a free lunch. Yes, they were rounding people up, by the bus loads and bringing them there. Mm-hmm. Can they get volunteers to go into Syria? Yes, because if that child is killed, that family now gets this monthly entitlements from the government, these subsidies that are for martyred children. So again, speaking to the lower segments of the socioeconomic chart in Iran. But let's look at the other side, the other segment of the population that's more difficult to contain. And again, why they ban social media and they ban the chatting between the sexes is because, for the most part, what this religious government has done is created a very godless population inside Iran, one that's very young. The statistics that's typically used is that two-thirds of the population of 70 to 80 million is under the age of 35. So they don't even remember a time under the Shah. They've only lived under this government. And they are more interested in iPads and in going on the web and onto Facebook than they are about learning about the Mahdi or about Shiite Islam or about what's going on in Syria. So, you also have a very curious population where a lot of the talk is extremely smart, and the kids are becoming very curious. But again, they've known, and it's said all the time, as long as you stay out of politics, you'll be safe. You're not going to be targeted. You know, if you look back at 2009 when the young Iranians flooded the streets in the aftermath of Ahmadinejad's reelection, you saw a small snapshot of what Iranian society is today. You have a very web-savvy, internet-savvy population of young kids who get onto YouTube, who get onto the web, who get onto Facebook. They're able to organize, and that's really the biggest fear factor. You have a regime that's main platform, whether it's religious, social, cultural, their main platform is to stay around. They just want to exist. So when people talk about them having nuclear weapons and are they suicidal, no, they're not. They just want to remain in power. So they will do anything and everything to remain in power.
That's very interesting. I mean, and, you talk about the, godlessness and this is all kids want to do. And I said that sounds familiar. That's kind of where we seem to be headed in our own country here, which is, really kind of pathetic, because all of a sudden, we have a world of atheists and, it's everything is the word God is being taken out of everything. And that's unfortunate, because I think then we create a bunch of mindless and possibly lawlessness, throughout the country. So it's kind of ironic how a lot of different countries are experiencing with their youth,
right,
whether it's by design.
Right,
it's probably by design.
Exactly. Right.
And it's a shame. It's really a shame. Another thing that I had just wanted to ask about is, we know that the American pastor Saeed Abdini is still being held in one of Iran's notably hardcore prisons. And, just for being a Christian, and have you heard anything about how he's doing and what is happening to secure his release? Because it doesn't seem to be out there anywhere about him.
Right. I mean, it's there haven't been too many updates as of the last month. And prior to that, his wife was able to speak to address a subcommittee, a congressional subcommittee in early December, which I actually had the fortune of attending and covering in person,
mm-hmm.
which I haven't been able to do for other appearances that she has made. You know, it appears that his condition is the same. His family is able to visit him for weekly visits, but he was transferred. And the irony being that after President Obama asked for his release over the phone with Rouhani in September, and let me give you a little bit of background for those who don't know the story, is that, you know, when Rouhani came to the UN General Assembly meetings in New York, President Obama and our administration did everything in their power to have some sort of sideline, one-on-one encounter, meeting, handshake, what have you. And Rouhani, on the last day of his trip, said, you know what, we're not going to do it, headed home. And President Obama still made a call to him on the tail end of his trip back to Iran, making this a historic call. So, again, the desperation of the Obama administration to really make this happen is very apparent in that fast synopsis that I gave of what happened in
mm-hmm.
September. In that call, he made a demand for Abedini's release. And subsequently, Abedini was moved, transferred to a more dangerous prison. So I know that Secretary Kerry has been drilled and questioned about why Abedini and the other two Americans, which I can speak about as well, to mention them as well, why they were not part of the nuclear talks in Geneva, and why that they weren't part of a precondition. You know, why couldn't Kerry and the Obama administration demand that the Iranian regime release these three Americans prior to even getting involved in any talks? And the response that Secretary Kerry gave is that he did not want these three Americans to then become hostages or pawns, or political pawns, and they wanted to keep these issues separate. How we can sit down and have negotiations with a country that is holding three of our own, they already are hostages in my eyes. You know, it's really, again, there's so many different ways. If you want to look at, you know, the betrayal to Israel, the betrayal to these three Americans and their families, the betrayal of, you know, of Egypt. I mean, we've lost so many friends in the process. And in what's happening, we're reshaping the region. We're allowing the Iranian regime to really spread its ideology. We're allowing Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah to spread their ideology. And, you know, when you look at these three Americans, It's mind-boggling that our government's not doing more. That in this day, we're in the year 2014, and somebody can be held abroad for this long. It's really amazing
mm-hmm.
to me.
It's disgusting. You know, I mean, I think that the effort that has gone into it has been so minimal. You know, this administration does what it has to do in front of the camera to make it look like we're doing things. But, the fact that, the pastor and the others that are being held are in horrible condition, probably. I would imagine the other three maybe are not as bad off as, you know, the pastor is. But how we are allowing this to happen, and you're right, we have made nothing but enemies of allies that have been with us for so long, and it's such a mistake, and it's dreadful what we're doing here. I have got to take a break, and then when we come back, I have one more question on the persecutions of Christians, and then if you've got some time, you can hang around. We have some questions regarding my favorite, the Muslim Brotherhood.
Great.
All right, so we'll be back with Lisa. I'm just going to put you on hold. And we will be back after this short break with Lisa Duffery from Fox News. We are talking about Iran and the persecution of different faiths, particularly Christians. And when we come back from the break, we're going to finish up with one question and then get into the Muslim Brotherhood, which you know is usually the topic of this show every week. So we will be back in a few minutes.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed... could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Ryan Seacrest for RAD. Over 300 people in this country are killed every week by a drunk driver. That's the equivalent of 2 747 plane crashes every single week. And the problem isn't going away unless we all do our part to stop it. So if you see someone who's about to drive after drinking, get the keys. Don't leave it up to anyone else. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council. Foreclosure is hard on every member of the family, but your family is not alone. If you're struggling with your mortgage, there is help. To learn about the government's Making Home Affordable program, visit makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE to speak to a HUD-approved housing counselor. It's free of charge. Visit makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE today. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, NeighborWorks America, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Daily Roll Call on conservativenationmedia.com. I am your host, Kathy Hinners. Our number to call in is 718-305-7176. The email's coming in. Our guest here, if you are just joining us in this half hour, our guest is Lisa Dafari from Fox News. Lisa is an expert on everything Middle East, including the Muslim Brotherhood. And Lisa, thank you again for joining us. And
pleasure.
I might as well just ask you this last question from, and then we'll get into just a few minutes of the Muslim Brotherhood issues. But Raymond in Alpharetta, Georgia is asking, how do we get our religious leaders to start a dialogue about Christians being murdered in the thousands?
That's a tough one. I wish I had a solution. And you know what? I think that when we first started covering the persecution of Christians across the globe, it was, you know, a new topic. Not too many people were covering it, and it was something that was left to the Christian right wing. And I do believe now that we have made a great improvement and progress in getting all kinds of media, left, right, center, to give just acknowledgement and to highlight these very, very important issues. So I am hopeful in that way, in that this has become definitely an issue that I've seen covered on different networks, not just on Fox News. I've seen the story of Abedini on, you know, and I just want to make one point about Abedini. There are so many Christians being persecuted in the region. And Abedini happens to be a U.S. citizen, and that's obviously a reason why we call on the U.S. government to do more. And his wife is fabulously passionate and very dedicated, obviously, to getting her husband to come home. And because of that, she sacrifices time away from her two very young children to go and do speaking engagements and appear on different media. And she's from Boise, Idaho, where there really isn't a mainstream, you know, media. It's not somewhere where she can get on TV every day, but she does travel quite a bit and does leave her children home with her mother so that she can do this. But again, my point being that, you know, she does dedicate a lot of time to keeping her husband in the spotlight, but a lot of these other persecuted Christians and the other two Americans being held in Iran, they don't have that luxury, so to speak. And I hate to use the word luxury in any of these cases, but just to keep in mind that there are other stories, there are other people there, you know, and that's, you know, something that, although I cover a lot of, that's a story that a lot of people ask me about, it's a story that everybody wants to keep updated with. I actually broke that story over a year ago, and it's something that's obviously very much on my mind and heart all the time, but there are a lot of other stories, unfortunately.
And
that's, you know, the job of the media. It's not a left-wing, right-wing issue. It's a human rights issue, and that's what people have to remember, is that, you know, whether he's being held for his Christian faith or for his, you know, political affiliation or his favorite color being blue, it's just another example of this regime and their ideologies and the failure of our government to do more. And going back to religious figures in this country, you know, it's you pointed out something, Kathy, that's so interesting, that, you know, for lack of religious guidance in this country, religion is really disappearing from our homes, our schools, our children, our culture, to the point where if someone sneezes and you say, God bless you, you kind of feel weird. Right?
Isn't that a shame?
So,
yeah.
That's something we grew up. I mean, it's really interesting. It's really interesting. And then you look at a country like Iran, where, you know, for the fact that religion is being shoved down their throats, that the young people are escaping from religion. So I think there's something to be said about going with a moderate route, where, you know, religion becomes something more than, you know, one side of the prism or the other, but something that is a, you know, a happy medium where, you know, and I'll give you, and I think it does start at home and in a cultural way. You know, in this country, we don't have so much of a, you know, let's take Christmas, for example. So, I mean, it's such a commercialized, obviously, holiday that, you know, something that bothered me this year more than anything else is, you know, the malls and the stores opening on Thanksgiving evening.
It
really bothered me. And then, I mean, I don't know if too many people will connect this to a religious, a destruction of like a religious, foundation, but, you know, family values or staying with your family on Thanksgiving, regardless of what religion you practice, is a part of the foundation that we should be fortifying for our children. And, you know, having mommy or daddy or auntie run out to the mall on the night where you're just trying to enjoy a family dinner for the sake of getting a deal or getting 20% off or 50% off or 60% off, I mean, that's what we're teaching our children instead of the opposite. And, I mean, it starts with these things and it goes beyond. But, you know, this is the culture that, you know, really needs to be, again, fortified and taught to our children so that we don't end up with a very, you know, a culture where religion is not, you know, is absent from.
It's a shame. And like you say, we grew up with something as simple as God bless you. I refuse to say bless you. And, you know, I refuse to say happy holidays. It is Christmas, and it is the religious aspect there. And, you know, that part is right. It starts at home, and do we really need to go out for that one more, you know, piece of material that we're going to give someone? We've lost all context, you know, of truly what it is. So, but please, you know that, and I hope that the pastor's wife and the other folks know that, they are truly in the hearts and the prayers of everyone, and certainly mine as well. You know, he is someone that I do think of often. I cannot imagine, you know, what is happening to those people over there. So, you know, they are in our hearts and prayers as well. One other question, and I just wanted to touch this base with you. It is about the Muslim Brotherhood. A comment that we get all the time regarding the Muslim Brotherhood here is that it is different, and this drives me crazy, it's different than the one over there. And I believe that it's just an excuse that people are in denial and that they don't want to understand that the Muslim Brotherhood is everywhere in this country. But, you know, how would you address the fact that it's different, you know, over there than it is here?
I'm going to give one. You know, the one thing that happened in what people would say was supposed to happen over time and happened overnight and is the clearest, most transparent proof of what the Muslim Brotherhood is to look at Egypt. Before, when there was the Arab Spring and the toppling of Mubarak and everything that ensued, we had everyone under the sun, including our own Hillary Clinton, welcoming the Muslim Brotherhood. That is very different from what others, including myself and the critics, were warning against. And they said, no, the Muslim Brotherhood, they're good people, and let's look at why. Well, they put up soup kitchens, they put up libraries, and we warned that that's the way that they connected with their own constituency. Again, you have a country like Egypt, similar to what we said about Iran. You have the lower socioeconomic brackets, they're more religious, they carry a large weight in a country of 85 million people in a nation where there's a lot of poverty because the economy cannot sustain a country of 85 million people. You had the Muslim Brotherhood sucking up to this constituency. They had their support. And what did we warn? We said, look, the Muslim Brotherhood, you have all the ingredients of an Islamist takeover. And what was that? You had a political vacuum. You had the only group, which was the Muslim Brotherhood, having the funds, the organization, and the following to swoop right in and take over. And they did. And you had President Morsi. And overnight, the Egyptian people witnessed what an Islamist takeover would be. They changed the constitution. He had a power grab. He wanted to bring in his own ideology and really reconstruct the entire political and religious structure of this large nation. And the Egyptian people said, this is not what we went into Tahrir Square for. This is not what we gave up our lives for. This is not. We're not going to be Iran. We're not going to wait 35 years in order to realize that we made a big mistake. So within 1 year, they toppled him, and now they're doing whatever it takes to exterminate the Muslim Brotherhood to the point where there is bloodshed. And you know what? That's something that, you know, President Obama made a huge mistake going in there and criticizing what the military was doing. But that would be equivalent. That would be equivalent to an Egyptian president criticizing what the Boston police was doing against those Boston Marathon bombers. They're exterminating their terrorists. We exterminate ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. And the hold that they have here now is just so many people are in such denial, and yet this is something that we talk about all the time because it needs to be brought out. And like you say, you know, they're very good at the civil rights and the human rights with the, you know, the shelters for the poor and the medical clinics and the free medicines and everything to show that they are good for us in America. And, you know, I think it's going to be interesting, you know, if the trial ever does get started over there. I know that they couldn't bring him in the other day because of fog. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. Right. But, you know, again, it's here. It's entrenched here. And, you know, so it's good for people to hear someone other than myself actually, you know, try to let people know that they're everywhere. So
it's unfortunate because I've said this before, and it almost appears that it will take another 9/11 for the American public to again have an awakening similar to the one we had in 2001.
I agree,
very,
unfortunately.
Very, very, very unfortunate and dark thing to say, and I don't wish it upon us by any means. But at the same time,
right,
how short is our memory? How short? These, you know, it's become even worse. You know, the conditions leading up to 2001, the 9/11 2001, we're not as bad as what we have now. Now we have a politically correct culture that almost enables these groups to grow and expand in our communities, in their mosques, in our schools, on our campuses, to fund their groups. Do you know how many exposés have come up in the last 4 or 5 years on college campuses where these Muslim student groups are raising money for Hamas, for Hezbollah, for the Muslim Brotherhood, or are opposite by Muslim Brotherhood, Hezbollah, or Hamas?
Yeah,
they have speakers
and
come in who are so ideologically not in the spirit of a school campus. And I'm so sorry to say that most of these schools are state schools, taxpayer money to have events where they are raising money for these groups. I mean, it's mind-boggling.
And it's the complacency, of our country, our people in our country.
It's the American mentality where unless it knocks on your door, it's not your problem. So you have the same thing with healthcare, and this is not my area of expertise, but this is a very small analogy that I could make, is that until you get that letter about your premium being exponentially raised, it's not your problem. Of course you want healthcare for everyone, including the poor. But when it knocks on your door, then it becomes a problem. And you know what? Terrorism, we can't wait. We cannot afford to wait for it to knock on our door.
You're right, and it's coming. You know, that's the hard part, but people are busy with their lives.
It's here.
Absolutely. So, Lisa, it has been such a pleasure, and I know that, you know, my listeners and anyone new tuning in tonight has absolutely gleaned a ton of information from you. You are brilliant, and I can't thank you enough for being a guest on our show tonight, and we look forward to maybe having you come back.
Thank you for all that you do, Kathy.
All right. Thank you, Lisa. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Okay, if you're just joining us, we have been talking to Lisa Dotfleury from Fox News. She is an expert on the Middle East and Iran and, of course, the Muslim Brotherhood. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back, and we will be talking about the Muslim Brotherhood a little bit more.
If you're wondering where Rush goes to do his show prep, you found it.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to stand for America now.
Adopting a new pet is a rewarding experience. And Shelter Pets makes super pets. Your new best friend will steal your heart, bring you happiness, and enrich your life for years to come. You can make a difference in the life of an animal. Adopt and bring home a Shelter Pet today. To find out more, visit theshelterpetproject.org. This message has been brought to you by the Humane Society of the United States, Maddie's Fund, and the Ad Council.
Hello, I'm Jennifer Meadows, your host on Grit and Grace. Please join us every Tuesday night from 10 to 12 Eastern for an honest look at the top political and cultural issues that are affecting Americans today. That's Grit and Grace for conservative analysis that is smart and entertaining. Tuesdays, 9 to 11 p.m. Central, 10 to 12 Eastern on conservativenationmedia.com.
Welcome back to Daily Roll Call on conservativenationmedia.com. Our number is 718-305-7176, and it is a lot quieter this week than it was last week when we had the infestation of the trolls. So thankfully, they must be on somebody else's site tonight. They are not bothering us. There's no overrun of phones, with these, I guess I'll call them idiots, that were calling in last week. So if you missed the first 45 minutes of the show, really shame on you, because we've learned a lot about the current situation in Iran. Lisa is brilliant when it comes to these things, and I'm just so pleased that she was able to take some time and talk to us tonight. We've been talking right before the break. We started talking about the Muslim Brotherhood and how so many people just think that it is so different from over there and over here. And I think the biggest mistake that anyone can possibly make is believing that. And if you believe that, then I need you to get your head out of the sand, because the ideology behind the Muslim Brotherhood, obviously, is the global caliphate, and that is the, you know, the entire world being under one religion, one set of laws, one constitution, nothing that we have or that we know of right now. You know, when you look at the Muslim Brotherhood, their creed, you know, their mission is Allah is our objective, the Prophet is our leader, the Quran is our law. The Quran is our law, jihad is our way, and dying in the sake of Allah is our highest aspiration. Well, when you hear the Quran is our law, I understand that as a religion, but the Constitution is our law. This is how we live. It's very antithetical to what we believe in this country. And so, you know, if you're going to write to me or if you're going to make a comment, just know that don't say to me that the Muslim Brotherhood is different over there. They may be different in some respects as far as culture, but they are no different than what they are here. And we certainly have an infestation of the Muslim Brotherhood in this country. In particular, the state of Tennessee, you know that I'm right outside of Nashville, and it is just, we are loaded. And, you know, we're going to be talking about some of the subjects, you know, what's going on with the Muslim Brotherhood after the top of the hour. So just, you know, you've got to get over this, you know, the infiltration in the plan, and we talked about this consistently, their strategic goal is in the document. And if you haven't read the document, if you haven't printed out the document, you know what? Print yourself out 18, I think it's like 18 pages, and read it. You know, the first few pages are in Arabic, and then the rest follows in English. And it is, again, the whole entire thing is based on what they are going to do, the process of settlement in this country. And, you know, we talk about CARE, and we will be talking about a new program that CARE is launching. And CARE is just, if you follow CARE, and you pay attention to what they're doing, you can see that the upswing is really starting to happen. They are more and more brazen. They are becoming emboldened. They are just now they're starting to put programs and statements out there. They basically just don't care. And the problem is they are a bottomless pit of money. How do we fight that? But there has to be a way to fight it. And we need to do everything we can, whether it's exposing them or, you know, if you've got money, you know, your school district has money, you're going to have to sue them for whatever it is that they're coming in doing. Because I'll tell you that the ACLU is not the American Civil Liberties Union. It is the American Muslim Civil Liberties Union. They are not taking on any lawsuits that have anything to do with Islam. Someone had asked me that question a couple days ago. They said, well, what about the ACLU? And, you know, specifically talking about what is happening in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And they're nowhere to be found. As a matter of fact, they have aligned themselves, at least Hedy Weinberg, who is the head of the ACLU in Tennessee, she has aligned herself with some of the names that we talk about quite frequently in the organizations in Nashville. So the ACLU is no longer for your rights, as whether it's a Christian or, you know, a Jewish person or any other religion. They seem to be just tackling anything that has to do with Islam. So, you know, where do we go from here? How do we fight this? It has to be exposure. And it has to be talking about it and spreading the word about what is happening. And instead of, you know, being complacent and you know, saying, well, Johnny has a soccer game tonight, or we've got, you know, ballet, or we have this or we have that, if you keep ignoring the problem, within a certain period of years, that ballet and that soccer isn't going to exist. Because there isn't going to be the freedoms as Americans that we now appreciate. So it's really something to take very seriously. And, you know, we've talked about this before, the five or six that we can just rattle right off right now of names of Muslim Brotherhood members that are working in the White House. And, you know, there was kind of like a poster that was out online that had different names. It had Muhammad Ali Biari and Rashid Hussein and a few of the other names that we've talked about. And I got so many emails and some phone calls about, is that true? Well, yes, it's true. And what's really amazing, and this is where you need to start paying attention, you know, follow them on Twitter. Follow Muhammad Ali Biari on Twitter, and you'll see that a few months ago, picture was of the For Rabia logo, and we broke down what exactly that means. So these are the things that you have to pay attention. If you don't know what this stuff is, you probably have seen it 100 times during the day, wherever you are. If you don't know what it is, it doesn't mean anything. So you have to educate yourself. You have to be aware of your surroundings and understand that they're in every school, they're in every university, they're in every religious entity in the form of interfaith forums. And we've talked about that last week, what a joke interfaith is. So these are things, you're responsible for this because we're letting it happen. And that is the disgusting part. We're letting this entire country and the principles and values and everything else that we stood for and stand for being taken over by a group who has said for the last several years, you know what, we're going to take you over. We're going to come from within. We don't need bombs. We don't need tanks or armies or knives or guns. We're just going to take you over from within. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And I don't know what part of that you don't get. And there are those of you that do get it. And for that, I'm very thankful. But you need to start, you know, have someone, if you're attending a function where, you know, we're going to be talking about the Muslim Brotherhood or Islam, bring someone that is totally green about the subject with you. Ask someone to tune in to this program once a week that doesn't know anything. What have you got to lose? Say, hey, you know what, let's sit down, let's listen to this program. You need to understand what's happening. Are you going to get called crazy? Are you going to be called a paranoid person? Absolutely. Who cares? You might as well, you know, label yourself a racist and a bigot and Islamophobe and a hater while you're at it, because those are like the top four labels that you're going to get. Racist, I don't understand. Islam is not a race, so that's kind of stupid. But anyway, you know, it's exasperating to hear what people are saying, and this over there thing is just, that's the one that gets me the most. You know, oh, they're different over there. Well, you know what? They wear their pants the same way there as they do here. So you need to really be mindful. And when we start talking in the second hour, when we start talking about the new organizations that are coming in and how they're forming these, you know, these new things for kids, it's probably already in your school. So maybe you could just go to like the school's website and try to see if this is here, because I'd want to know. I'd want to know if a terrorist organization that we will not call here in America, we have not deemed the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization, but everybody else has, which is very disturbing. But you might want to look to see if you have a Muslim Brotherhood organization in your child's school. I'd have a big problem with that. If my kids were in school and they came home with some of the literature from, you know, a Muslim Brotherhood organization, I can guarantee you I would be there in a second to demand something. You know, you can't just sit and be complacent anymore. So after the break, we're going to get back into talking about the three newest organizations, or should I say trends, not necessarily organizations, but trends that are happening right now, all under the guise of the Muslim Brotherhood. Grab somebody else, bring them to the couch or the chair or whatever you got to do, have them sit down and listen to what we're going to be saying. And we'll probably get into a little bit more about the four stages of the Islamic infiltration. So take a break, and we will be back in the next half hour talking about this and so much more. So go ahead and join us when we come back.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
For Talk Radio News Service, I'm Jeff Holtzman. President Obama today unveiled an anti-poverty initiative that he calls Promise Zones. The plan essentially provides tax incentives and grants to poor local communities. The first five zones he announced will be in San Antonio, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma, and southeastern Kentucky. The president highlighted the attendance of two senators from Kentucky, Republicans Rand Paul and Mitch McConnell, as evidence that the Promise Zones have bipartisan appeal. Some Republicans, however, are skeptical, saying that the Promise Zones won't work and that they're simply a publicity stunt meant to coincide with the 50th anniversary of the War on Poverty. Nonetheless, the president said today that he'll announce 20 new Promise Zones in all over the next 3 years. The White House says that the Promise Zones are the key to creating jobs, attracting private investment, and growing economic activity in impoverished areas. The plan is also aimed at improving educational opportunities and reducing violent crime. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
Welcome back to Daily Roll Call on ConservativeNationMedia.com. Welcome to the second hour of Muslim Brotherhood Chatter this evening. I am Kathy Hinners, your host. If you have questions, you want to call in, the number is 718-305-7176. We've kind of rehashed everything that we talked about in the first hour. So now we're going to talk about something that I find very disturbing, and I've got a few emails about this. Something that is now being thrust upon us from the Islamists is something called the Bridging Culture Project, which is being launched by the National Endowment for Humanities. And I know, you know, what has that got to do with Islam? Well, it's a program that's based on the culture and the religion of Islam. All right, but first, let me break down what the National Endowment of Humanities is. All right, it's an independent federal agency that's been around since the 60s. It's one of the largest funders of humanity programs in the United States. They have all types of grants, and grants typically go to like the cultural institutions such as museums, archives, libraries, colleges, public television, radio stations, sometimes even to individual scholars and things like that. Okay, so there are these grants from the federal entity of this NEH that, you know, are being used to fund different various projects. Now, I will say that this particular project is being in part funded by the Carnegie Foundation, which is based in New York City. So keep that in mind, that is not entirely funded by the government. The chairman is, now the breakdown of the structure, all right, the chairman of the NEH is kind of consists of a board of 26 what they call distinguished private citizens appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. So the national council members are obviously connected to a political entity through this. The national council members, they serve kind of like staggered 6 years. So they're there for quite a while. The point of this is that this is an arm of the government. And the chairman of this whole NEH is responsible to the White House. It's the White House liaison under the Director of Congressional Affairs. So yeah, we've got a government entity here. And so what is this all about? Well, the Bridging Cultures, it's called the Muslim Bookshelf, and it's the Muslim Journeys that has branched out and is now in 953 libraries across the country. It's sort of like a roving show, if you will. And what's really interesting is what it contains. The Muslim Journeys Project presents, so they say, to the American public resources representing diverse perspectives on the people, places, histories, beliefs, practices, and cultures of Muslims in the United States and around the world. Folks, this is Dawah. We've talked about this before. This is Dawah at its finest. The Dawah is the proselytizing of Islam. And it is something that is it is a necessity. They are required to perform Dawah in every shape and form that they possibly can. So here you have another prime example of Dawah. And it is in 953 libraries. And again, you're talking probably public institutions. And I will tell you, congratulations to the Tennessee State University at Murfreesboro College campus. Yay, you are the recipient of one of those journeys. So Murfreesboro just keeps getting it. I'm sorry, but they seem to be the battleground for the Muslim Brotherhood these days. And they're in the news a lot this week, unfortunately. So give me a call. Let's talk about what's happening in your town. But anyway, if you go to, they have a website that is connected to, the NEH website. Go to their website, and again, it requires some research, but the whole idea is to start looking at who the people are that are involved in this, this whole little journey, if you will. One of the books in what they call the American Stories Collection is written by a guy named Eboo Patel. Patel is, and I know you're going to get tired of hearing this, but he is obviously Muslim Brotherhood, and that connection has been made for quite some time, not just by us, but by several organizations that follow this, and he's been pinned, and it's been proven that he is Muslim Brotherhood. In July 2011, he used to be this administration's faith advisor. I think he still might be. I think he's up there with Dalia Mogahed in their Partnership for Religion or Faith-Based Organizations or something like that. But he spoke at a main event of a three-day convention held by the Muslim Brotherhood, their organization, the Muslim Student Association, which is the number two friend of the Muslim Brotherhood. He appeared on a panel with another guy that we've talked about, Tariq Ramadan, who is the grandson of Hassan al-Banna, who just happens to be the founder of the Muslim Brotherhood, and another scumbag, Serhaj Wahaj. Now, we haven't talked too much about him. He is from New York. He's disgusting. He was named as a possible co-conspirator back in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, but we know that he has led in his Jumas and his Friday prayers and his sermons in one of the most radical mosques in Brooklyn, the Al-Farouq Mosque. He truly believes, and he says it in the movie The Grand Deception, that this country is garbage. Those are his words. This country is garbage. Well, he is garbage. All right, but this is who the author of this book that is on the Muslim journey in our libraries, this is who, this is one of the authors that this is his background. So, again, you're talking, pure Muslim Brotherhood, and the connections are despicable. Another book in the series that is in the traveling show, if you will, is written by Ingrid Mattson, who is the former president of the Islamic Society of North America. So those, and the list goes on, okay, there's a lot of Muslim Brotherhood affiliates and members in this program. That's just two of the books that I saw in a quick glance of that particular category, the American Stories. There are a number of films that are also being shown throughout these libraries. The majority of the libraries have the books. And then there is those special libraries that have been picked to host, like, the films and also, you know, speakers. So, you know, you'll be seeing a lot of your Muslim Brotherhood speakers going into your libraries to, you know, to do their dawah. So one of the films, one of the producers of the films is called Unity Production Foundation, obviously, who has connections with CARE. And we've talked about them before. We've talked about the fact that, as a matter of fact, they were in Rutherford County, Tennessee, in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, doing training with Connecting Cultures to give to the staff and the administration and the teachers Arab training. This was a few years ago. We've talked about that a lot. I've written about that on the website, so we've talked about that quite a bit. But there again, you know, there's always that connection. And if I can do it, you can do it. You know, you just got to – it's like following the money. So you really just have to start following who's who. So, you know, someday if you go walking into your library and there's a, you know, a Muslim Brotherhood speaker, you know, it's something that you need to speak to whoever runs the library and say, you know what, this is unacceptable. This is just another way that they are performing their dawah. It's just another way that they are infiltrating our schools and our systems and everything about our you know, society. The interesting part is, you know, you see this peaceful face of Islam that's portrayed in the 953 libraries that they're going across, but the real face of Islam is being portrayed in their own textbooks. And I find this to be very interesting. We've talked about this textbook. We didn't get into a lot of it. The name of the textbook is What is Islam? And it's being used by a school, Islamic school in Knoxville, Tennessee, called the Anur Academy. And I'm fairly confident that the same textbook is using throughout, probably throughout the country, in a lot of the Islamic schools. It's just like, you know, any other school. If you got textbooks, it's used nationwide. So when we come back from this break, we're going to touch on the second face of Islam. You know, the good face is out there in the library, but the true face is coming, obviously, in the form of what their textbooks actually say. ConservativeNationMedia.com starts off the work week every Monday in a big way. It's Inside Tennessee with Dave Vance. But even if you're not from the volunteer state, the issues that affect Tennessee are spreading out all over America. Dave Vance brings his veterans' insight and the most informative guests to Inside Tennessee every Monday, so make sure to check them out. Brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council. That is Inside Tennessee, Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. All right, we are talking about always the Muslim Brotherhood and their infiltration. And so we've gone over a couple of the authors of some of the books that are parading around the country in this bridging cultures journey, if you will. And we have found out that the textbooks that that they're using are basically the true Muslims, the true Islamists that come out, what they're teaching their own children. And it's quite different than the face that they portray, obviously, to the American public. A few examples. We've got just a couple examples that are taken from their textbook, and nothing is taken out of context. And you can look at this book. I believe you can look at it online. It's a textbook called What is Islam? The book generally reinforces Islam as a supremacist ideology, and it dovetails well with the anti-Christian Jewish prayer, the Al-Fatiha, which is recited by Muslims several times a day, which is amazing, you know, in their prayers. And we'll have to get into this, you know, at another time when we start looking at what do their prayers really say. But there is that little supreme, you know, they are supreme their supreme ideology over all of the religions. And they've said that, though. CARE has said that. The founder of CARE, you know, Omar Ahmed, has said, we aren't here to be like any other religion. So, you know, they basically told you that. So the proof is in the pudding, and the pudding is the examples that I'm going to talk to you about when we come back from this break on exactly what is being taught to their kids. We'll be right back.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
Okay, so just type the job website address here. That's it. Then you enter what job you're looking for there.
Electrician.
This is Peter. Recently, he got help going on the internet for the first time to look for a new job.
Okay, then you just hit search and...
In the past, Peter's gotten work through people he knew, but he heard there were more jobs online.
There we go.
These are all for me?
Uh-huh.
Really?
He had no idea just how many.
I can't believe it. This one looks good.
Peter is thinking the internet might be for him after all.
And this is just one website.
Wow. Why didn't I do this sooner?
See what the internet can help you do at everyoneon.org or call 1-855-387-9166 to find a free training class near you. Brought to you by Connect to Compete and the Ad Council.
Been looking for an online gathering place? You know, a familiar screen, does everything you're used to, except give you grief for being a conservative? You gotta try the Tea Party community. At TPC, you'll know how everything works from the very first minute, and you'll probably find a lot of friends who are already there. Organize, communicate, share ideas, upcoming events, pictures, and videos. The Tea Party community connects and empowers like-minded, politically conservative people like you. Sign up today at teapartycommunity.com.
On the next episode of Recipes for Disaster.
I'm making beef sliders for my friend Sammy. Nana taught me to always pull meat off the grill early, so it's extra juicy.
Use a food thermometer to ensure ground beef is 160 degrees, or you could make people really sick. Sandy didn't think twice about the slider she ate until yoga class, when a nasty case of food poisoning turned her downward-facing dog into upward-moving lunch. Watch Recipes for Disaster at foodsafety.gov and learn the steps Maria unwittingly leaves out. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to ConservativeNationMedia.com. You are listening to Daily Roll Call, and I am your host, Kathy Henners. And if you want to call in, 718-305-7176 is our number. Before we go any further, I just want to tell you that we will sometime this hour be talking to a friend and someone that was a guest here on our show, John Guandolo. He is going to be calling in, and we're going to talk about an upcoming event that we are both participating in. And so, you know, we'll probably break off for a few minutes and talk to John when he calls in. And I'm not sure if this is him, but let's take this call. Hey, welcome to Daily Roll Call. Is this John?
Hey, this is the wrong John.
Hey, it's the other John. Hey, welcome. How are you?
Good. Good.
What's going on tonight?
So, it's just amazing that I'm finally at a loss for words because
that is amazing.
I don't understand what's happening in this country anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so difficult to understand exactly what you're talking about. It's as if you're speaking a different language. Because it's just so unbelievable that this stuff is going on right here today in our country, in our face, and our government, instead of putting a stop to it, embraces the madness.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't understand.
Yeah.
I mean, besides you, that is flabbergasted, that just doesn't understand why I was born in Hawaii with the Muslim name, doesn't put a stop to this. Why?
You answered your own question. You answered your own question. You know?
I don't think about it.
We know what name he was born with, and obviously it is an Islamic name. And, I guess Barry is an Islamic name, but certainly Barack Hussein is an Islamic name. And I think there is the answer, John, in that this is his ideology. This is his background. This is his, you know, his call to create a society under the global caliphate. And you're right. We are letting it happen. And I don't know how, other than what we are doing and what you do, I know that you speak to other people about this, you know, how do you stop it? You know,
I mean,
it's well entrenched.
Today needs to be a call to arms. I mean, basically, mm-hmm. you're Paul Revere. You think if people didn't listen to Paul Revere, we'd be speaking what today? You're Paul Revere,
yeah.
and it's a arms, Kathy, because we need to stop this. We need to step up on the head of this snake and stub it out now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And hopefully it isn't too late. I agree.
Yeah, I wonder if it is too late.
Well, you know, the awakening stage, I think, is kind of starting to be a little late. I think if people don't start waking up within a very short period of time, I think that it is going to be too late, because they're already present, and the amount of infiltration that has occurred is phenomenal. And, you know, I look at this stuff every day. You know, I work with the intelligence that comes in, and you try to figure out, you know, who's who. And it makes you feel like, you know, we've lost. And I don't mean to sound that way, and we haven't lost, but we are so close to being where the UK, I don't know how far ahead the UK is, but they are right behind. You know, we haven't had a lot of cities try to be compliant with Sharia law. Dearborn, Michigan is a disaster, and so is Minneapolis. You know, Minneapolis, you know, the largest population of Somalis outside of Somalia. So, you know, we're doing that. We're allowing this, but it starts with a lot of the Catholic charities and a lot of the organizations that tout themselves to be helpful to bringing refugees into this country, when in fact that is the most damaging thing that we are doing, because we aren't bringing in the Mexicans that are Christians, or, you know, the Asians or you know, anything like this. We are bringing in the Muslims, and that is where the danger lies. You know, when you have a country that is predominantly Christian. I mean, we have several faiths, but, you know, this was founded, I don't have to tell you that, on the Christian principles, and it's being changed. And they are, right now, they are a minority, but they are becoming emboldened and so brazen that they don't care anymore. You know, when you have a mosque such as we have in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, that had invited known members of the Muslim Brotherhood, and we're not talking guys that are wannabe gang members or anything. We're talking about Muslim Brotherhood members coming to a town that has a mosque that they said was obviously a religious entity that has no religion intended for it, and they've hosted Muslim Brotherhood in their mosque, and they don't care. They don't deny it. He gave an interview. And in it, he said, oh, yeah, you know, and they say I'm a co-conspirator to the Holy Land Foundation, but, you know, if I was, wouldn't I be behind bars? This is how it's happening, you know, that they said, we don't, yeah, and we don't care. No one cares, so why should they care? So, you know, it's very sad. It's something that, you know, obviously we are very passionate about, but it's going to have to go beyond that at this point. It's an awakening. That if we don't, then we are in big, big trouble. And I've said it before, if your head's in the sand, if you don't take it out now, you better have a burqa and a Quran next to it, because that's what you're going to need. And, you know,
what I have,
I'm sure,
is my Bible, AR-15. I'm ready to go.
There you go. And you know, is it going to be a religious war? I don't know.
Be a religious,
you know, we're talking
war.
Well, and we're talking.
I'm sorry.
Hmm?
Go ahead,
that's okay. Go ahead.
Well, it's going to read me a publicity war. I know it sounds crazy. It sounds crazy. But that's what it's going to come
well,
down
who
to.
Who would have thought?
So,
who
we
thought?
Talk about Muslims being a minority. The true minority in this country, Kathy, and it started 30 years ago, the true minority in this country is the white male.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you see all these crazy psychos coming out and shooting people in a movie theater are white people because they're disenfranchised with this country. We're no longer, white men are no longer of any value. Now, if I was a white man and I was in the process of changing over to become a woman and I was transgender white male, well, then I'd fit in and I'd be all happy in this society. But as a white Christian male heterosexual, I am a dying animal. And there's a lot of us out there, but we're a dying animal.
You're right.
And that's the problem
and
in this country.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I have no disagreement with you on that. And that, unfortunately, is so sad to see what's happening here. But, you know, we're all becoming that you know, extinct animal, because not only our ethnicity, but our way of life, as we know it, our principles, our core principles, and our core values. And, you know, and I, this has really nothing to do with anything except that Eric Holder this afternoon decided that the state of Utah can go ahead and endorse the marriages there, the same-sex marriages, even though the governor had said they were not going to acknowledge that until the Supreme Court ruled on that. So Eric Holder comes out of the woodwork, because no one has really heard from him in some time, and makes a decision, a federal decision in a state matter. So there's a lot of problems, you know, and Eric Holder certainly is one of them, and he's one of the reasons why we'll never be able to get rid of organizations like the Muslim Brotherhood, because they're not going to allow it, because they are Muslim Brotherhood. So what do you do? You know, it comes down to a war, doesn't it?
It does. Going to have to close. I did my homework, as you asked, a couple weeks ago, but I can't find the 7 that I found in my area.
7?
7 in my area. That's not in counting. We live in the Tri-City area. That's just in the capital city. The two cities outlined, there's many more.
Okay. That's great. For those of you that were listening, I think it was 2 weeks ago when you were last on, you know, we had said, you got some homework to do. You need to find out what mosques you have in your area. And obviously he did do that. And there's 7 of them. So I think the next step to that is now to go on their website and look where it says about, and start looking at if they list names. Now, a lot of them will not list a name, but look to see who the imams are, and you know, start connecting. All you have to do is type in their name and then put Muslim Brotherhood after their name, and a connection, if there is a connection there, is more apt to bring up an article regarding that. So that is your next project, and this is exactly what people should be doing.
I'm
right. Yep. Okay.
Start all over again.
I know that it sounds, you know, trivial and maybe kind of, you know, high schoolish, but this is what you need to do. So, John, I want
you to go into their
websites and look under the About section and see. They very rarely will name their imam, but see whatever name is under there, whether it's a board of directors or whatever. And then try, you know, Googling the name, put in their name and maybe Muslim Brotherhood, and that could bring up any articles with them, with associations with the Muslim Brotherhood. So see what you can come up with there. I know that there is one in the city of Albany that you will find something. It's I believe it used to be on Central Avenue. So check that one out. And then when you get back to us, we'll see what you got.
I sure will. I'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks so much for calling.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
All right. Goodbye. So there you have it. This is all I've been asking for people to do, is to look around you and look to see what you've got as far as Islamic schools, Islamic centers, mosques, and things like that, and you know, try to figure out who exactly is in those mosques, who's running that mosque, and you'll be surprised at some of the connections you're probably going to come out with. And that is the only way we're going to be able to continue to expose, is by doing the research yourself. So, you know, that's just what I would like people to do, you know, and you certainly don't have to call in and give your report, if you will, but I think that everybody needs to start doing the investigations themselves, and this is how it starts, and it's just all about connecting those dots that will lead you to, you know, the connection of you've got a Muslim Brotherhood mosque in your backyard. And I will tell you, the other thing to do, if you're listening, and John, if you're listening, is to run the property address through the county to see who actually owns the property. And if you come back with something that looks like AIT or ISNA, that is truly the Muslim Brotherhood. And they, unfortunately, either control or own flat out the majority of mosques in this country. So this is something that you really do need to pay attention to. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we will be back. So let's assume that if you're listening to conservativenationmedia.com, you're a conservative. You love America just like we do, and you don't want to get caught short in case the leftist government drops the ball and leaves the country and your family unable to get the basics of life in an emergency. Since that's the case, you're going to want a supply depot to get everything from patriotic gear to survival necessities to outfit and protect you and your family. And your pipeline to those essentials is right here at conservativenationmedia.com. Go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That will take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative and emergency survival needs. Wave your flag and be ready for whatever the future holds starting right now. Go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution where America always wins.
Hey, everybody. Rachel Ray here. Nothing puts a bigger smile on my face than cooking up a big meal for family and friends. But there's not enough room at my table for the 17 million kids in America who are struggling with hunger. These children, that's one out of every five, often have to skip meals because there's just nothing to eat in the kitchen. Yet there's more than enough healthy, nutritious food produced right here in America to feed every last hungry child. If only there was a way to get it to them. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food to give hope to hungry kids and their families all across our country. But they can't do it without your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America at your local food bank and at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and I'm proud to be a book person. How do I choose a book? Sometimes it's the cover, sometimes it's the title. I guess I'm pretty visual. If a book's really impressing me and the writing is really good, I will peek and see what the last paragraph is, because the endings of books should rock you. I am a book person, and if you're a book person too, read to a child and spark a lifetime of ambition. Join me at bookpeopleunite.org, because reading is fundamental. A public service announcement brought to you by Reading is Fundamental, Library of Congress, and the Ad Council.
Hello, I am Robert Garding of the New Wise Conservatism radio show, heard on Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 Central, through conservativenationmedia.com. Being on the air since 2007 from behind the silver CNN microphone of freedom, we've helped people become more informed to keep socialists out of the White House and Congress. But that work isn't over yet. Tune in Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on CNN for the New Wise Conservatism radio show, the voice of reason in our unreasonable world.
Daily Roll Call on conservativenationmedia.com. I'm Kathy Hinders, your host. If you want to give us a call in the last half hour that we're on here, 718-305-7176. We have on the line a good friend of ours that has been on our show before. I mentioned this earlier in the show, John Guandolo. How are you, John?
Yes, I just wanted to say, why are you such a fucking stupid, ignorant bitch, dude?
Well, I guess that wasn't John. So anyway, John should be joining us shortly. I'm hoping that he's going to be able to get through. Hey, remember I did say at the beginning of the show that we didn't have any idiots? Well, I guess I was wrong. So that was not the John that we are going to be talking about. So anyway, what I wanted to get to in the last hour is talking about some of the new groups that have surfaced. And one of the ones I think is very important to bring up is this new group by CARE. CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, who we've, you know, talked a lot about, has come out with this new program called Muslim Game Changers. It is a 4-month social justice training program for Muslim high school students. Does that sound odd to you at all? You know, I think that's kind of frightening that we're having high schools all of a sudden have, you know, mini activists, basically, is what this is. So this will, what they say is this will equip participants with the tools to critically understand their world, effectively challenge injustice, and build legacies of positive change in their communities. The program consists of weekly interactive sessions and field trips centered on themes of identity, history, social responsibility, and organizing tools, all grounded in an Islamic worldview. So this is great. CARE is now coming into high schools, forming what's a 4-month social justice program that is, in effect, creating little activists, or certainly grooming them to come out of high school as an activist. Now, we've got another caller here. I am hoping that it is the real John. So let's see if we got here, if we got John on the line. Hey, is this John?
Hey. Hello.
No. Okay. I don't know that we're going to be able to even get John tonight. So anyway, the fee to join this program, CARE is charging $50, which is, you know, basically nominal. So a lot of kids are going to be able to join this. That is the standard fee to join the Muslim Game Changers Network. The membership fee helps them to sustain the comprehensive empowerment project for the youth, including the cost of what they say is materials, staff time, and, you know, field trips. And it looks like they do take quite a bit of field trips to get the kids used to, you know, dealing in political realms, such as, you know, whether they take them down to their city halls or whatever. This is exactly the sort of organization that needs to be watched carefully as it enters the schools. Game Changers is nothing more than a program to create, you know, if not hundreds, thousands of Muslim activists, and that is part of the plan. Got to have your activists. You've got to have your community-minded organizers, you know, ready to go by the time they hit college. That is a must. So that in of itself is very frightening, and I think that is something that you have to watch for. They're entering the public schools under the guise of social justice, when in fact it's about fighting to get what they consider equal treatment of Muslims. It's just another tool that they're using to get into schools, because they're starting to see the pushback in the public school system in particular is becoming pretty great. And they can't have that. That's not part of the plan. So this way they come, you know, in every door and every window under the guise of something different. As long as it's not a religious, you know, outwardly religious, this is how they get in. So, you know, you think about the ways that they perform their da'wah, which we've talked a lot about before. If you don't know what the word da'wah means by now, then you know, we've got a problem. But I will say, for those that are just joining us, Da'wah is the proselytizing of Islam, which is one of the most important tenets of Islam, to spread the word and to hopefully be able to convert people to Islam. So, you know, we've got the game changer. So now we have this organization that's making many social activists. They've just recently reported or released a report on bullying, which we've covered the last few weeks. And how does that fit in? Well, bullying is their new buzzword. And I tell you what, when you say bullying to a school administrator, you know, any school administrator, they tremble, as they should. I mean, bullying is a very serious thing. But the comical part of their report was they had, you know, they reached out to all these kids in schools in California asking them, did they feel harassed or, you know, whatever the question was. We did go over a few of the questions. And the majority of the kids came back with a negative. No, it's never happened. No, that doesn't happen. No, this doesn't happen. So it's all about the parents. The parents need that report so that the political, you know, entities can look and say, oh, they're right, they're being bullied. Well, look at the study. They're not being bullied. All right, so there's another thing, how they're getting into the schools. They're coming in under the guise of bullying. Now they're coming in under, you know, game changers because they want to be social activists. So that's another thing that they're coming in under. Another one that they're coming in under is we have the high school version of the Muslim Student Association. And, yes, that is out there. And I do believe in most cases it is called the Muslim Student Association. I know that the Metro Nashville Schools has their first Muslim Student Association in high school. But they're categorizing it as an after-school program. So, brilliant. You know, we know that the MSAs are in hundreds and thousands, well, not thousands probably, but hundreds of college campuses across the country. And now they're coming into community colleges. You don't want to leave them out. And now they're coming into high school. There's MIST. We've talked briefly about MIST, which is the Muslim Interscholastic Tournament, which involves Muslim students in various types of competitions. And then at the end of their competitions, of course, they go on to the state tournaments. So again, you know, these all sound very, very generic. They all sound very appropriate, and they sound very, you know, geared towards all about the kids, which is fine. I get that. But when you look at the background, and we've talked about, you know, making that connection, there, right there, are four different ways of how they are getting into the schools, all under the guise of different, whether it's an interscholastic tournament or, you know, an after-school program, whatever. And then there's, of course, then there's what we call MINT, which is the Muslim Youth of, well, they've now changed. It's Muslim, the Muslim Youth Network of Tennessee. And that is, MINT is probably, the letters might be changed differently for, you know, wherever you are, whatever state you are in, but they certainly are there, and they're the youth organizations. Now, the one that's listed particularly in the Muslim Brotherhood Manifesto is the Muslim Arab Youth Association, which is MAYA. So you don't know. We don't know how you're going to see that portrayed. But if a new organization is presented to your school, you need to look at it. You need to take that information to the school board and say, you know what? We want you to look at who this is before you allow them into the school. Is that going to work? Probably not. I can tell you that an awful lot of school boards, and I will speak particularly to ones that I know of in Tennessee, have the spine of a jellyfish. So that isn't going to happen. But you need to bring these organizations into the limelight and say this is unacceptable. But just remember, the way that they're doing it, by bringing, you know, these organizations under the guise of whatever we just talked about, when in fact it is no more than the Da'wah. All right, now we have a dilemma because we've got another caller on the line, and we don't know if it's going to be the real John or if it's going to be one of the other kind of morons that have been calling. So we'll take this call because I am waiting to hear from John. So let's see if we got the real John. Nope, he already hung up, so that was not him. All right, so we've kind of touched base on the organization, and then there's just one other new thing that has come out this past week in the city of Murfreesboro, which has been in the spotlight all week because of what is happening. You know, the mosque there has been in national news for quite a long time, and they just are getting more emboldened all the time, and this is very interesting of what they've come up with this year. So we are going to take a quick break, and hopefully we will be back with John Guandolo.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Peek-a-boo. Peek-a-boo. Smile.
Smile, buddy.
Come on. Smile. Oh, honey, he's still not smiling.
Maybe he's not a smiler.
Yeah. Maybe he's just not a happy baby.
Maybe he's just being a boy. You know how boys are.
Or maybe he's teething. Oh, poor baby. I think his gums hurt.
Maybe he's just tired.
Or maybe his tummy hurts. He didn't eat that much.
Maybe he's not ticklish.
You think maybe he's scared of the dog?
Maybe he'll outgrow it. Maybe it's a phase. Maybe he just doesn't like smiling.
Maybe he has autism, and we can definitely do something to help.
Maybe is all you need to find out more about autism. No Big Joyful Smiles by 6 months is one early sign. Learn the others at autismspeaks.org/signs or see a doctor today for an autism screening. The sooner it's diagnosed, the better. And it can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Molon LeBay Challenge Coins and Wares. Similar to challenge coins used by various military units, these MLCCW coins are ideal for anyone that champions the right to keep and bear arms by highlighting the Second Amendment and the Greek phrase Molon LeBay, which translated means come and take them. Come check out our pro-freedom, pro-liberty, and pro-Second Amendment coins and shirts at MLCCW.com. That's MLCCW.com.
Dr. Martin Luther King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, and the worst injustice imaginable is the wrongful conviction of an innocent person. I'm Sam Thurman, host of A Just Cause Coast to Coast, Tuesdays 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, on conservativenationmedia.com. We take a look at what happens when innocent people go to jail as a result of bad evidence, wrongful prosecution, and dishonest witnesses. We use real cases of actual Americans who've been wrongfully convicted. A Just Cause Coast to Coast, Tuesdays 8 Eastern, 7 Central, conservativenationmedia.com.
Welcome back. Daily Roll Call on conservativenationmedia.com. We are in the final minutes of our show, and we do not have the real John with us, so he may not have a chance to call in this evening. But I do know who this is on the other line. This is Robert Garding, which is from the New Wise Conservatism show. Hey, Robert, how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm doing well. I missed your show last week because we went out and did something, and my wife's father had died, and we had a funeral last Friday, so it was kind of a hectic day. So I just totally missed your show, but I got it on archives, and I've listened to it, and I heard all the trolls and all that happy stuff. So you had your hands full last week.
Did, and I guess this must have just been like the trickling of the last three or whatever, you know, for the past few minutes. So, but I do recognize your number, thankfully. So, so what's going on with you?
Yeah, well, what would you do if I just called in with a different number somewhere?
I guess I'm going to take my chances, but just know this, I will beat you. You know, when I see you, I will beat you. So that's all right. So I, you know, I'm really happy to hear that you're starting, you know, to talk about the, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood on your show, and I think it's great because I think
I've actually talked about them before. Yeah, I'm sorry. I've actually talked about them before, but it's I keep getting sidetracked, and I think that's one of the things I want to talk about tomorrow, about how the American people have really got to start realizing that we are actually fighting about 5 or 6 wars for this country right now, and all of them are being waged at us by the liberal left in this country. And all the things that they do, we've got the war on terror, which essentially is one that we're actually in, but the Democrats don't want us in. We've got the border thing, illegal immigrants, global warming now, with Obama saying that all this cold weather we've had is because the earth is so hot. And I'm going to be talking about that one, too.
Now, that's going to be a good one. I'll have to listen to that.
So that's they're just giving me so much to talk about this week. But it's like every time we start paying attention to what they are doing to this nation, they come up with a new crisis, and it's always one of these five things. And it's like it's either global warming or Islam or Muslims or the the border or this mm-hmm. whole thing with Nancy Pelosi the other day getting mad because some Republican said something about how we needed to stop the immigration process, the way they, the illegals coming in because the children and everybody just need to be sent back. And she just got highly irate and just said, "This is ridiculous with you going after children." And she was waving her hands everywhere, and she looked like a maniac.
Oh, God. Yeah, she's
Barbara
she's
Boxer,
special,
that's
for sure. Oh, yeah, she's
it was
another
Barbara
one.
Boxer.
And then the other one was that I think it's Sheila Lee Jackson that came out with the idea to rename welfare. I forgot what it I can't remember what the name of it was.
I've got something about that, too. I can't remember what it is right now, but I've got something about that one, too.
Well, thankfully for the news, for us with all the different, news outlets, our shows are very easy to fill because there's just so much going on. And I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's so much that's going on is just disgraceful. I don't know if you got to listen to I don't know if you were in for the beginning of the show where we had Lisa Dottori, who
was
the expert on Iran. And I tell you, when you look at how she explained, what is really happening, and it's amazing that we're allowing all this to happen. But I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I was just saying that my other caller says it's time for war, so
Well,
I don't know.
Essentially it is because we're having a war waged against us in all these different areas that the Democrats are waging the war on us, and many of the Republicans are involved in this, and that's the thing that's really bad about it. But, we've got to start paying attention to what they are doing and the different ways they are getting our minds off of the things that we need to keep our minds on.
Yeah, you're right. Distractions are everywhere. Absolutely. I agree with that. So, but I want to have a little wager with you because I just want to, and then I'll go so I can end the show, but I want to have a wager with you. I personally think Chris Christie, I think there's another shoe to drop. I think that, He appeared very sincere, about, the whole incident on the George Washington Bridge. But I think there's more to it, and I think there's going to be another shoe to drop that's going to prove that he lied. I don't know. Maybe we don't have a wager because maybe you agree with me. I don't know.
I do. I think there's more to come, and we just don't even know it yet.
Yeah, he just it's unfortunate because he comes off so sincere and everything and, accepting responsibility, which, certainly we don't hear from that from the government. But I just have a feeling that there's a lot more to the story than's been told so far. So all right, we'll have to have another wager on another item some other time. But, it's certainly lots of fun to have all these news stories to talk about. So I will be listening to you tomorrow. And, if you need anything, I know we've been talking back and forth about the Muslim stuff, and thank you again. I know you've covered it before, and I thank you for continuing it, so I'm not the only crazy one out here that, you know, talks about this stuff, so I appreciate it. And I'll be listening to you tomorrow, Robert.
Okay, well, I'll be there.
All right, you have a good night.
You too, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, that is Robert Garding from the New Wise Conservatism Show, which is on Saturday afternoons, and really a different show, you know. So, you know, if you start listening to the different shows here on Conservative Nation Media, you're going to get a little bit of everything, and that's what Robert's show has. You know, he talks about, you know, a lot of the issues as far as constitutionality and things like that. So great show to listen to, especially on a Saturday afternoon when there's nothing going on. Real quick, we've got like 5 minutes left. I just want to tell you about this one thing that is happening in Murfreesboro. There's an art show that is going on. I know this sounds kind of, you know, trivial, but there's an art show that's being put out. It is in the rotunda of City Hall, and what's interesting about that is that it's under the guise of the Murfreesboro Peace and Justice Art Project, and it is a contest throughout, you know, the county schools and the city schools, with the theme being branches of one tree rooted in love. Well, basically, it's more rooted in Muslim Brotherhood, because what we have found out, there was an email attached to this invitation, and it is, in fact, from the Islamic Center of Murfreesboro, and none other than the Muslim Brotherhood from Murfreesboro, Salah Spinetti. So, you know, there again is something as innocent-sounding and nice-sounding as a wonderful art project for the children of the school district to participate in. They're going to be judged by, you know, a professor from one of the colleges. You know, that's great. The kids love that, you know, prize there. But then the whole thing gets really trashed because of who is sponsoring it, who is backing the project. And what my problem is that it's being held in a city government building, when in fact the whole thing is being run. And as a matter of fact, he says in this email, the committee was formed to support the Islamic Center of Murfreesboro and promote respect for diversity. So there is an issue. And if anybody from Murfreesboro is listening, you know, I've been talking to different people. They've been putting the word out. And the schools need to be called and said, you know what, you need to end this now. And then same thing with the mayors. Get that out of the city hall. So anyway, that's sorry we didn't have much time to cover that. I'm sorry that Mr. Guandola didn't get to join us this evening. But I will tell you that we are, myself and John Guandola, will be speaking together at an event on the 14th, which is next Tuesday, in Oak Grove, Kentucky, at the Valor Hall Conference Center. John will be there signing his new book, which is The Jihadi Generation. Excellent, excellent reading. And then we will both do a presentation. He will cover the national issue of the Muslim Brotherhood, and I will bring it home to the Nashville and Kentucky area, you know, to show exactly what's happening and who and what is the Muslim Brotherhood there. So if you're in that area, whether it's Oak Grove, Bowling Green, Nashville, you know, the northwestern part of the state, please stop by. It's $20 per person. You can register at eventbrite.com, or I believe they will be selling tickets at the door. And, you know, be prepared, though, to show identification when you do come. You can't just walk in. You're going to need to prove basically who you are, so have your ID there. But it is going to be a great event. John is exceptionally bright, and when it comes to the Muslim Brotherhood, he is retired FBI and Special Forces. He's got quite a military career, very decorated, really a true patriot. And I'm honored to be, you know, doing this event with him. And it's going to be a good event, and I'm hoping that we get to see a lot of retired military and retired law enforcement. And again, you know what? If you get it, bring somebody that doesn't get it or doesn't have a clue, okay? You know, just try not to just certainly come by yourself, but you know what? Bring somebody else with you. So, you know, more and more people need to start learning about this. So, again, you know, Tuesday, it starts at 6:30. There'll be the book signing, and then we'll do the presentation. So, February 14th at Valor Hall Conference Center, Oak Grove, Kentucky. Be there so we can talk more about the Muslim Brotherhood. And that's pretty much going to wrap us up for this week. I thank my guest, Lisa Daftari, for coming on from Fox News. And I thank you all for listening. And we will be back here next week with more of the infiltration of the Muslim Brotherhood. Hey, have a really good week, and God bless.